We're going to get right into it right now.
Tell me what's really going on.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I'm saying.
Creative solutions are everywhere.
Leaders lead leaders.
Policies limit behavior. Culture drives behavior.
If not now, then when?
Whatever the best thing we can do as human beings in this moment, in this time in history, we're going to do that.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Alium Idea Lab podcast, a place where we kick around interesting ideas with interesting people. And today on the pod, we have a very interesting person, a special guest, my friend and mentor, Dr. Michelle Lin. For those of you that don't know who Michelle is, well, everyone knows who Michelle is, but I'll tell you anyway, she is a professor of emergency medicine at UCSF. She is founder and editor-in-chief at Alium and Alium.com blog, and she's been disrupting medical education since before I was an eager-eyed medical student. In this wide-ranging conversation, we talk about her ideas for reflecting on the macro-level career issues. She talks about the knowledge doubling curve, personal learning networks, then we dive into problems with academic change. Ouch. She then gets into the very interesting topic of the outsourcing of med ed from academia, finishes with a talk about social entrepreneurs, the digital Swiss Army knife, and finally her vision for the future of medical education. It's a great interview, not to be missed. Let's jump right in. Michelle, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you here. You are a thinker, a thought leader, a disruptor, and so I just want to pick your brain. It is a very active brain. I know you've been thinking about some things. What are you chewing on? What's been on your mind?
Oh, I have so many things I've been thinking about. But most recently, you know, I've been doing this thing for past couple of months now where about once a week, I try to get out of this micro lens view that I have. You know how we're always just being reactive and just dealing with putting out fires. Once a week, about for 1 hour, I will sit back and force myself to think about macro level issues. Like, what is it that I am trying to accomplish in my career? And I think we don't do that enough, actually. But I sit back, and most recently, what's been bubbling to the top of my head is thinking about where is medical education or health professions education is probably the better term. Where has it been? Where is it now? And where is it going? Such that I stay relevant in the conversation, because this is my calling. I want to be in the center of this all. I always get back to this idea of where is education going?
Oh, this is going to be good. I'm excited. So do you like go into a corner of your house and like have a cup of tea and meditate, or it's just kind of like you schedule time to force yourself to think about this?
You know what? I do it in different places. Sometimes if I get all uppity, I'll go for like a long walk in the neighborhood. It's always pretty nice weather here in California. But more traditionally, I will just plop myself down in a random coffee house. People watch a little bit. I think I want to offload my brain into some other space, and these ideas kind of naturally come to mind. And of course, I'll have like my Moleskine out and jot down all my notes there.
Tremendous. So, okay, before we get to the, you mentioned three things. How has it been? Where are we now? And where is it going? Let's first talk about where have we been and where are we now?
Yeah, well, I think for me, I can only gain some insight just based on my own personal experiences, which is, you know, I'm thinking back to when I was a resident at Harbor UCLA many years ago and thinking about, well, what did the learners and educators, what do they look like? And so as a learner, as a resident, I remember it's not actually very much different from now, which is I would go to conference 5 hours a week. I would sit there. I would listen to the information that was being delivered to me from a podium. I would take notes, digest it, sleep, and then repeat. And that's kind of similar to what it is now. The educators, I think, in that time were very much so, you know, like the Amo Matus, and I had Diane Birnbaumer at my shop. They were just so great about distilling information out of textbooks or journals or review articles, and they could deliver it in such an engaging way. And I'm like, gosh, that's what I want to do. But interestingly, you know, it was still a very much a one-way delivery process. And that kind of shifts me now to what do learners and educators look like now? And it is completely changed, because, I mean, we have evolved so much since then. There's so much literature about how we learn, the neuroscience, neurobiology of how we learn. And I don't understand why we haven't evolved with the times. It just seems so odd to me. And so now, like, for instance, our learners, let's call them learner 2.0, the current learners of today, what are they dealing with? I think Well, one quote I like to always bring up is something. Have you heard of the knowledge doubling curve?
No, tell me about that.
It's by a guy named Buckminster Fuller, and he says the knowledge of humans, the entire knowledge base, is doubling at an accelerating rate, exponentially so. So in the late 1800s, the entire human knowledge base doubled at about every century or so, about every 100 years. Then there's the printing press. Then there's the internet. Guess what the knowledge doubling rate of all of human knowledge is now?
Faster.
A little faster. Like, is it 10 years? Is it 1 year? It is freaking 12 hours.
Oh, my gosh. I was going to say 10 years.
12 hours.
I must be on the slow end of that doubling curve.
Yeah. That freaks me out. In that, like, this is what our learners have to deal with. They are flooded with all of this new information. No longer is reading a textbook sufficient from A to Z. You are constantly having to keep up, and you will always be behind at this rate. And so learners are dealing with a whole different game plan in terms of how to keep relevant in medicine. And so with that knowledge doubling rate, they have also all these different modalities of learning. You got blogs, podcasts, videos. You have just a whole network of ways you can access information. And so it's important right now, our current learners, whether they know it or not, they're actually creating personal learning networks for themselves.
Okay, you just said a big word. What does that mean?
And that just means they're creating a network of trusted individuals who they go to for information, like the EM Wraps. People who subscribe to that, I feel like they trust those educators there, and they are part of that learner's personal learning network. So I think how we learn is very different from back when I learned.
So this begs the question then, if the learners have evolved, are educators changing as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the age of one-way unilateral information delivery equating to good education, I think that day is over. And the analogy I like to use is, let's say you have two cancer drugs, one that is moderately expensive, doesn't work, has a fancy name to it, really well branded, easy to give. It's a pill.
Education sucks a man.
The other one, much more expensive, a little painful to give, and has an exceptionally high cure rate. Which drug would you want? Of course, it's going to be the second drug, and it's going to be unethical to give the first drug. Bring that into education. Podium-based lectures, we know, just don't work. No one absorbs the information. Contrast that to all these different forms of active learning, flipped classrooms, team-based learning, simulation, all of these modalities. They work, but they take a lot of effort on the part of the learner, part of the educator, to make happen. So doesn't it seem that it's kind of unethical to continue education the way it is being delivered now? And so I think the way the 2.0 educator, the way it's evolving is, I think we are slowly getting better at delivering, for instance, at least information in smaller, shorter chunks at 15 minutes or so, because beyond 10 to 15 minutes, really, there's a huge drop off in attention span. And then people are getting better about the flipped classroom models.
Yeah, it seems like there are some educators that are evolving on those lines with the cancer drug that works. But I think a lot of us are stuck kind of in a sexy old drug that is easy and doesn't quite have the results that we want. So how do you move educator? How do you move the needle on educators kind of shifting from old school to new school?
That's a wonderful question. I think there is no magic drug that's going to solve that. I think it actually has to be a entire systems reboot almost. I mean, how often do you update your apps or your operating systems on your computer? Why aren't we updating our operating system of medical education? It's stuck in the same ways. You could tweak it a little bit, like the chairs on a Titanic, but really it needs a serious reboot in terms of what we value, how we reward educators, and this new model of the educator 2.0 model.
And so, yeah, I see that. You're an academic. I work in academics as well. It is like the slowest moving beast that ever existed. And I think, you know, both of us have had experience also outside of academics in the professional world. And what is it? Why are we so slow to catch on to this? What is our problem?
What is our single problem? No, there are many problems. I think there's just very little incentive, one, for change, because there is the culture of this has always worked. I don't understand why we need to put all this extra effort to change things. And the second is, you know, we are being led by non-millennials who don't quite understand how to value a lot of the digital technologies that are involved in education. So it's hard for them to grasp, well, how do we know this is effective? How do we know this is of value? I think we're waiting for innovators from the millennial community to help guide that discussion. I think right now we're stuck with the top-down approach and they don't quite get it yet.
So it seems to me like, though, there are a kind of group of young faculty and even some mid-career faculty that are emerging that are this kind of a new hybrid that are getting this, that are pushing the boundaries, that are doing this differently. How do you see the balance shifting in academics in that way?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question, because this is really the world that I live in now. And right now, I think academic institutions don't really know where to put us. And just to step back again, so there are in academia, generally, two populations of educators, one on the top of the pyramid scheme, well, probably three now, but on the top of the pyramid schemes in terms of academic value are the educator scholars. They're doing scholarship, they're publishing, they're out there giving grand rounds. That's at the top of the pyramid. It's a small subset of the educators. And then everybody else, I would put them into the category of clinician educators. These are your rock star bedside teachers. They're a part of your core faculty. They're involved in residency and medical student education. The clinician educators really form the bulk of the educator pool in academia. And at the very bottom, I'd say maybe 10 years ago, there's this tiny little cohort of digital innovators in the world of education. And these are people who started dabbling in podcasts. For instance, like the Mel Herberts of the world. They were just, how did they know so early on that this could be something? It was amazing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know how long it's been going on. At least 15 years, I believe. EM Rap, EM Abstracts. They were really at the forefront. But did they get any academic credit from that? I really doubt it. And so that's why I put them at the bottom of the academic pyramid. And so I think there's these three communities now. And since about 2009, which is when we started the Academic Life site, since 2009 to about now, we've grown from, there were like maybe five of us in the blogging world to over 200 currently in just emergency medicine blogs and podcasts. Like it has exploded onto the scene of education. And now in my mind, the way I see education unfolding now is that there's still educator scholars at the very top that are academically valued. There's clinician educators, and there is a ginormous base now of the digital innovator in education. And not only that, before, I feel like all the learners, they gravitated to the clinician educator, right? They were the only players in the game. They're great bedside teachers. But ever since this whole new population grew out of digital innovators, I feel like so many people are now gravitating to this new group of superstars in education that interestingly may or may not be in academia now. And so this is an interesting dynamic, I think, in terms of how education is unfolding.
Yeah, so it sounds like the value, at least in the learners educationally, is in the digital innovators, the digital innovator educators, as you would call them. And like you mentioned, we're already seeing great educators in our specialty leaving academics while continuing to be educators and have a great impact. People like Rob Stone and Salim Rezaei, who may have been in academics and are now continuing to be rock star teachers, but from a community standpoint.
Yes, I hear you ringing in. I apologize. I said Rob Stone. I'm not referring to the American rapper on RCA Records. I'm referring to Mike Stone. Please forgive me, sir.
And then even some of our best educators who have always been in the community are in the community. People like Rob Orman, who are not academics. can you see, like, do you foresee an exodus from academics? Can MedEd be outsourced from academia altogether?
Isn't that crazy that we're talking about that question? I actually posed that question to a very academic community, and I heard this collective gasp and all the oxygen left the room. And I'm like, oh,
I
probably shouldn't have phrased it that way, but too late. It's out there. I said, can it be outsourced? And I just left it hanging there. And I really do think not only can it be outsourced, but I think a couple of the horses have left the barn. It is being outsourced. And you look at it now, right? EMRAP, EM abstracts, they're not in academia. And technically, even though ALEM has the word academic in it, we are also outside of academia. And I feel like we are able to impact education on a very direct level with our target audience that sometimes academia can't do. So I would say, yeah, absolutely. It is being outsourced. And if academia continues on its current path, it will be, I would hesitate to say, it hurts me to say this because I'm an academician at heart, is it will be completely outsourced. And what would be left in academia is that all the apprenticeship stuff. Yeah. I mean, you're going to get your clinical education on shift in academic institutions. Everything else could be going outside.
That's crazy to think about.
Isn't it?
Or even the hybrid model, kind of as you mentioned, I guess you're right. It is kind of a hybrid now. It's just really weird to think about that is where we are. So then how do we support these innovators, either within or outside of academia? How do we support innovators to sustain these innovations and move MedEd forward?
Oh, that's the $1 trillion question, right? Especially in the age of this free, open access medical education. The knowledge and the content is free. So how are you going to financially support the people who are developing all this content? I think you have to be very creative in how you do it. I don't think we've figured out the solution yet. That's the problem. And I think that's what all of us in the blogging and podcasting community world, that's what we struggle with. But I think the answer actually could be bringing all of these innovators back into academia, supporting them, some sort of a salary support, because I mean, all this education that, for instance, Salim is doing, all this education that SGEM is doing, why doesn't that count as much as a journal publication? I mean, you're reaching amazing, you have an amazing reach of learners, you're advancing education, you're accelerating knowledge translation. Why does that not count as part of your job? And I think, you know, to answer your question about how do we support this, I think the answer could be to give it a lot more intrinsic academic value for all this stuff that we're doing in the online space.
Yeah, and if that doesn't happen, then you make a good case. The exodus might just continue.
It might be. It might be. And I think this hybrid model is where essentially what we're doing is right now we're seeing the explosion of what are called social entrepreneurs. I thought this is a really interesting term, right? These are people willing and wanting to advance the social good of the community using potentially business-like principles, not so much for-profit, if they can be nonprofit, but using business principles outside of academia and educational institutions, because they're not up with the times, and we have to be nimble enough to be able to innovate. And what we're creating essentially are social entrepreneurs.
Yeah, and I see that with you and some of the ALEM team, that you guys are really pushing the envelope and bringing the best of what the business world can offer to our kind of educational endeavors. It's cool to see.
Yeah, yeah. And you want to know one of my not-so-secret world domination plans is how cool would it be? I would love to generate enough revenue so that I could actually sustain and financially and pay all of these people on my team who are doing amazing things, you know, like the Chief Resident Incubator, the AIR series. How cool it'd be if I could actually salary support them in their academic jobs. That would be an interesting model to support their efforts and continued efforts, because I think they're making great strides in a very short period of time.
That leads into my next question then. You hinted at part of it, but what's your vision for medical education in 2025? 8 years from now, what's your vision for MedEd?
8 years? I'm hoping, like, you know us, we innovate
at
the order of weeks. Yeah, like you're talking about weeks, right? Not years. We are too impatient. But, you know, in 3, 5, 8 years, whatever it may be, what is my vision? That is an interesting question. And, you know, I would attack this looking at maybe the four stakeholders in education. Let's tackle it this way. So you have the learners, you have the educators, you have institutions, and you have accreditation bodies. And I think all of these three stakeholders need to be aligned by 2025, like you say, if you want to bring digital education and innovation to have it remain within academia and not be as outsourced as it's currently moving towards. And all four of these stakeholders need to be aligned. So for instance, like the learner, let's say learner 3.0, what do they look like? They're going to need to be trained to figure out how to filter through all of the digital information that are coming at them. How do you identify trustworthy information? How do you create personal learning networks? How do you sustain a lifelong learning habit? Then you have the educator 3.0. And this is where I think we can make the biggest amount of change in the shortest period of time if we invest some time and effort into. And that is really improving professional development in terms of digital literacy and competency. It's so important because if you are not relevant in the digital world, you're missing the boat, right? You're missing to where the learners are. You're kind of teaching in the space where the learners have already exited several years ago. And so if I kind of actually imagine this as, if you are a hammer in education, every educational problem you see it's going to be a nail. And so let's say your hammer is simulation. You're like, oh, I see a problem in communication. Let's do simulation. I see a problem in learning about asthma. Let's do simulation. And what I think what we need to do in professional development now in academic institutions is become more of a digital Swiss Army knife.
Ooh, mm-hmm.
Right? So yeah. You like that? So you see a problem. Which of your tool sets are you going to use to try to address it? It might not even be digital. It could just be a tabletop paper exercise. But you need to be facile in all the different delivery and educational methods out there so you can appropriately address the problem that you have. So I like the idea of the being an educator as a Swiss Army knife model. So that's the educator 3.0.
And what about the institutions?
Institution 3.0, what do they look like? You absolutely, in order for your educator 3.0 to survive in the digital world, they need to be valued within the academic institution. And that's not what it's like now by any means, like you and I both know, right?
Mm-hmm.
We essentially are doing two jobs. We do our educator scholar thing and try to publish. And then in our free time, we do all this other stuff, which is actual education. And how cool would it be if you were just to focus on one thing and do a deep dive and build your career in that? And so I think we need to really expand our what are considered promotable activities or things that are valued in the promotions and tenure committees out there. Because if you don't do that, your educators are going to leave. It's just unsustainable to be living two different lives. I find that right now institutions are very much in an ego system mindset rather than an ecosystem mindset, right? They're very focused about what is it for the institution that you are doing for us. It's all about us. Let's claim what intellectual property that you are developing as us and let's lock it down rather than an ecosystem where, you know, instead of claiming things, maybe you should be contributing things. It's a different mindset that I think institutions are having a hard time grappling around because I think it all comes down to money in a way and reputation. And I don't know how to rectify that in my mind, but I think that's the direction it has to go for this to work.
Yeah, you know, let me interrupt you. It seems like business gets that. Businesses have to value the quote-unquote learner, the consumer, the end product of all of our education. And, you know, the good businesses really focus on them and making sure that they have what they need and not the other way around. And it seems like academics, the focus isn't on the learners. It's on that image or that prestige or whatever it is.
Absolutely. Well, I think it used to be a monopoly. They were the only games in education and no longer is that true. And I think they will quickly come to realize that if they don't become more nimble and encouraging and have the missions align with the learner and the educator, things are going to break.
Okay. So that's learner 3.0, educator 3.0, institution 3.0. There was one more that you were talking about.
The fourth stakeholder I have is just the accreditation body 3.0 model is, you know, how right now residency program, training programs, medical schools, they're very time-based metrics. that's going to go away. That has to go away, right? Because what if you've had all this advanced training before? Why do you have to spend the same amount of time as someone who has no advanced training on the same topic? It makes no sense to me. I know it's easier to track, but I think we need to get down to the individual learner-based competencies. And if you pass those competencies, you are good to move on. Time shouldn't be something that holds you back. And on the flip side, if you haven't mastered it in 4 years, maybe you should stay another year. It should go both ways. And so I think all four of these, the learner, educator, institution, accreditation body 3.0 models, they all have to align for digital innovations and education to be brought back into the academic home.
You cast a fascinating vision. But it resonates, right? It makes sense. It needs to happen. And I hope it happens within academics, as I know you do as well.
Yep.
Michelle, thanks for being with us today. Do you have any last thoughts to share with us before we go?
Yeah. Let me leave you with a quote that I oftentimes refer to. And it's by, this guy you might know, Albert Einstein. And he says, "We cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we used when we created them." Right? We cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we used when we created them. And that's why, we cannot rely on our current org structure to fix the health professions education environment. And that's why I think we're so successful and innovative in our ALEM team, is because I really think all of our senior residents, fellows, junior faculty, even non-physicians, they're really the thought leaders in ALEM. They're really the creative ones that are driving the direction that medical education should go. So I would challenge those of you in power seats in academia to listen to those people at the bottom of the org chart, those who you don't normally ask for advice. Look at the broader stakeholdership pool and think about, maybe they have something to add to the conversation to push the needle a little bit in medical education.
Tremendous. Thanks, Michelle.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
This is the ALEM Idea Lab podcast. ALEM is a virtually based not-for-profit medical education startup. You can check us out at ALEM.com on the interwebs. You can hear other great content from the ALEM team at the ALEM SoundCloud page. Our theme music is composed by Bobby and Susie, with thanks to Chris Joffrey for the hookup. We can continue this conversation on the Twitters at ALEM team. I'm at Jeff_Riddell. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you next time.